It's time now for Tiger Talk Overtime.
We need you. We need the fans. We need the Auburn family. We need the staff. We need the players. We need everyone in this building that is involved in our program to buy into our core values to drive this train.
Nobody split. Give the ball up and over and in, I believe.
Ball pass, front court, Brian Smith, baseline, eight-footer, in and out, no good. Oh, my goodness, they put it down by Porter. Oh, my goodness. Hello, Abbeville, Alabama, a one-handed slam.
Carnell Williams at the tailback. They'll hand it off to Williams up the middle. 25, cuts it inside. 30, 35, 40. There goes Cadillac to the 50, to the 40, to the 30, to the 20, to the 15, 10. Go crazy, Cadillac. Go crazy.
Reach it down, he knocked it away. Ball loose on the deck. Throws it back out. Harper gets it. Harper down the floor. Harper shovels it to Brown for three. Yeah!
I tell you, you ain't going to run to get any popcorn if we keep this up.
I knew we could be competitive in men's basketball at Auburn. I didn't think that championships were necessarily in the cards. Auburn's a special place. I had a special team.
Bryce eyes the bucket, spins it up. In and out, no. Rebound, Washington saved it. But Brown is there for three in the corner. Yeah, baby!
All right.
Auburn leads.
Get back, play some defense now.
We've come a long way. And just grateful for the opportunity. Understand that if it wasn't for Auburn bringing me to be their basketball coach, I never would have had the opportunity to realize, obviously, one of my goals as a college coach is to get to the Final Four.
That does it. History has been made. The Auburn Tigers, for the first time ever, are going to the Final Four.
Tiger Talk Overtime is presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now at 343-0106. Now, here's your host, Doug Holton.
All right, thanks very much. Welcome into the show, everybody. Doug Holton with you for the next hour. Glad you're with us on Tiger Talk Overtime. And we're going to talk some college football a little bit at the beginning tonight, not quite as much as I was thinking after listening to Bruce Pearl's press conference today. We're going to talk more basketball, but a couple of notes on college football and Auburn football. J.D. Rim, as you know, has left the team, is no longer on the roster. And also, it seems like Peyton Thorne has a little bit of separation from what I'm hearing that from people who were at practice this week. He has quite a bit of separation from the other quarterbacks on the roster right now, heading into A-Day next week. So is that good or bad for Auburn football? We'll talk more about that maybe next week as we get into A-Day. A couple of guys that I'm hearing also are progressing well for the Auburn Tigers. Number one, Robert Lewis, who came from Georgia State and is going to play some wide receiver, maybe some slot for the Auburn Tigers. Keep an eye on number 14 as you head toward A-Day next weekend. And also Sam Jackson, who is a quarterback slash receiver from California. His hometown actually is Chicago, Illinois, but apparently he's making a lot of noise as far as an outside wide receiver as well. So it's going to be fun to watch the quarterbacks and the wide receivers next week in practice and on Saturday at A-Day. Again, we'll talk more college football next week on the show as we get close to A-Day. But college basketball in the news as well. Of course, it's March Madness. And the big news for the Auburn Tigers this week was KD Johnson hitting the transfer portal. He will elect to go somewhere else for his final season in college basketball. And while KD might have mutually agreed to move on in the transfer portal, Coach Pearl and his comments at the press conference today, which was very interesting, maybe shed some light on why KD made the decision he did, because the Tigers have another guy coming in next year whose name is Tahad Pettiford, who might play that two spot.
He's going to be one of the fastest, quickest, most explosive little guards I've ever had. But he's not a true point guard. Now, can he play some? He might. But I actually think early in his career, I think I'm going to try to play him off the ball and let him do what he do. Get buckets, right? Get buckets. Which may help you understand why the roster's moved in the position it's moved a little bit now. So, yeah.
Okay, so KD is in the portal. Look for some other names to maybe enter the portal as well. Possibilities there, Dylan Cardwell, Jani Broom, maybe going to the next level. Also, Trey Donaldson and Aiden Holloway. Keep an eye on those guys, and we'll see what happens with Auburn basketball. No question about it today, though. Coach Bruce Pearl was in a testy mood, and he cannot forget, and probably should not forget, what happened last week in round one to the Auburn Tigers losing to Yale from the Ivy League, who got destroyed in round two by San Diego State. Anyway, Coach Pearl tried to put a cap on that and explain exactly what happened.
We got the ball into Jani really tight, and he got stripped, you know. Or Jalen Williams on a duck in, he dribbled it off his foot. And we've seen him make that play a million times. Denver came off a double stagger, got his jersey held, and they got fouled. They didn't call it, and it turned the ball over. Trey throws it away, going backdoor to KD.
And I don't know about you, but those comments seem to indicate from Coach Pearl that his players were responsible for the loss against Yale last week, and they were partly responsible or mostly responsible for the loss. They are the ones that play, but doesn't sound like some other coaches that I've heard in their post game from the regular season or the postseason. Anyhow, another thing that Coach Pearl can't seem to let go of is the Chad Baker-Mazzara situation from last week, which he continually strongly hints that should have been a flagrant one instead of a flagrant two. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show with Scott Griffin. But Coach Pearl's comments from today, when he admittedly says it's not the first time this season, or wasn't the first time this season, that that situation has occurred with Chad Baker-Mazzara.
He should have never done it. He should have walked away. There were several times during the course of the season where he made the same mistake. And so what a really difficult way to learn from that mistake.
So the first thing that occurs to me after those comments is if it had happened more than once during the year, which I think it happened in the very first game that Chad Baker-Mazzara played in the Baylor game, wouldn't the coaches correct that before you got to the Yale game in the postseason? Seems like it to me. But anyway, Coach Pearl continued.
So I'm just going to tell the Auburn family, while I know you're disappointed, okay, if somebody was messing with your son, you'd just got to stand up for your son a little bit, wouldn't you? Stop messing with my son. Stop it. He apologized. He made a mistake. I'm calling you out. I'm not having it. For those on social media that want to continue, unfollow those people. Stop it.
So there shall be no negative comments on the Auburn social media or any social media page. Anyway, the situation with Chad Baker-Mazzara was the biggest play in the Yale game, the biggest reason that Auburn got beat in round one, even though they could have won the game without him. And it should have been dealt with earlier in the season, the first time, the second time it happened, and it wasn't. And that is nobody's fault but the coaching staff. So anyway, Coach Pearl, no question about it, was in a testy mood today, defending himself, I guess, defending his coaching staff, defending what they have done over the past few years, which really doesn't need defending, but he felt the need to do it anyway.
And here's the last thing. I'm not asking anybody to kiss my ass, okay? I'm not. You want to write good things or say good things, great. I hope I'll work really hard to earn those things. And I will, at some point, and maybe it's in the future, maybe it's in the past, I'll give you reason to criticize. You want to criticize the Yale game? Criticize the Yale game. Let's tear it up. Let's ask questions about the Yale game. I'll try to explain why we lost that lead. That's, have at it. But this was a great team at Auburn.
Well, we disagree on that. It wasn't a great team because great teams don't bow out of the first the NCAA tournament in the first round against Yale. And then San Diego State in the second round beats Yale 85-57. So it was a game that Auburn should have won, and they should have been at least on to round two, game two in the NCAA tournament. Maybe still alive this weekend in the Sweet 16. Most people going into the tournament thought Auburn was a 16, maybe an Elite Eight team, and they did not get there in 2024. So Coach Pearl definitely having a hard time today dealing with the criticism of his coaching staff, his Auburn team in 2024, and they did win the championship in the SEC tournament. We'll give them credit, and Coach Pearl has done some great things at Auburn, maybe the greatest era in Auburn basketball, but this was not a great team because of the way the season finished. And I'll bring up the point again that Coach Pearl has been at Auburn in 10 years. He's won a handful of regular season and tournament championships in the SEC, which is a great accomplishment. But as far as the postseason, since he's been there 10 years, they've been past the first round, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament one time. And that was in 2019 when we went to the Final Four. So we'll talk about college basketball tonight, March Madness. And Scott Griffin joins us after the break. We'll get his thoughts on what is going on. We'll talk about Bruce Pearl some more. Glad you're with us on Tiger Talk Overtime on a Thursday night. We'll be right back with more thoughts on one of the greatest times in sports, in the sports calendar, March Madness. More talk about college basketball in just a minute.
Welcome back to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now, 343-0106. Now, back to Doug Holton.
All right, welcome back to the show, everyone. Time to talk some bracketology. Glad you're with us on a Thursday night, Tiger Talk Overtime, here on FM Talk 106.5. And joining us to talk some college basketball as the Sweet 16 is underway now. Clemson is taking on Arizona as we speak, and also UConn against San Diego State. Scott Griffin is with us from the Magic City, or a little south thereof. Scott, great to have you on the show tonight.
Douglas, how are you, sir?
Good evening.
It's a good evening to you. It's a great time of year, as you know. We both enjoy it the heck out of it. And, you know, as fun as the 64 and 32 is, because you don't know who's going to upset somebody else, and it always happens, and you're trying to guess who it's going to be, and we never get it right, it seems like. The 16 is really when the nitty-gritty kind of hits, and you get really quality matchups. So, kind of exciting.
Yeah, and I wanted to get into that a little bit. We talked earlier in the day about the process and can we improve it and that type of thing. But yeah, the SEC, with only two teams left in the Sweet 16, and people were definitely thinking during the regular season that the SEC was one of the top two conferences in the country,
yeah,
probably with the Big Ten. Are we doing this thing right? I started thinking after we talked a little bit about the way the NBA does it, and should we cut the field down to 48 again in those first whatever games in the first weekend? Should they be like a 2 out of 3 series? Do we have too many of these Grand Canyons and Colgates and that type of team in there?
But everybody loves that. That's the problem, and you're never going to go backwards. I don't think you're ever going to cut it back. Just like I think football made a mistake. That's a whole other topic. Going to 12. I think 8 was the perfect number. It would have been the perfect number this past year.
Yeah.
But they went to 12. So now somebody's got to have buys. And I just don't think that's fair, especially in football.
Yeah. I agree.
And could work against the teams not playing. They don't ever think about that part. But now that, you know, 64 seemed to be a good number. 48's a really good number. But then we had to go to 68 because we have to have two more playing games. It used to be one, then we had to add another one. And it's just, it just dilutes the thing. Now, to your point, the Grand Canyons of the world, they beat Alabama. They could have. Yale, you know, whoever, Oakland. Those are cool stories. It makes March Madness what it is, where it really is legitimately whoever makes the field of 68, they're all 0-0 and they all have a chance for the national championship on paper.
Yeah.
But in reality, to your point, it's probably not happening. Although George Washington has made a Final Four, a FAU has made a Final Four. There's some odd things that have happened lately, but normally, as you know, it's a 1-2 or 3 seed for the most part getting in the Final Four. So I don't think they're ever going to go backwards. I just hope they don't add more because that just makes it even more diluted.
You don't think we should go to 128 then?
No, I'm not a big fan of. Then it would have to be March, April Madness.
Yes, which it probably already is.
Yeah, we'd have to take some more weekends.
We'd have to go past the Masters then.
That's right.
Yeah.
But we don't want to do that.
Yeah, just hitting on that point a little more, though. You know, we also talked about these teams like Grand Canyon, like Yale, like Colgate. I'll pick on a few of them, but yeah. You had a chance to watch Samford a good bit this year. But Samford won their regular season.
Yeah.
The teams, these smaller conference schools that didn't win their regular season, but like Yale, they got in the tournament by a buzzer beater over Brown in the tournament. Is that fair? And I always think about the ACC, for whatever reason, they have 4 teams in the 16 out of 5. Virginia lost, but a team like Pitt, you know, gets left out, who beat Duke, right?
Yeah.
Beat NC State, beat Clemson in the regular season. And they get left out in favor of these teams. It's always a big question in my mind, during March Madness.
Right, because they can only take a certain amount of teams. But again, the specialness of it, where everybody gets a chance, even the small ones, they love that. That's what makes great TV for them. And let's be honest, it's all about TV at the end of the day and the excitement of it and all those kind of things. Yes, you know, could you make an argument for Pitt? Well, obviously, yes, absolutely, that they're one of the top 64 teams in reality, but really, or 68 teams. Really, it's not the top 68 teams. It's just the 68 teams that happened to make it, to your point, because a lot of them won their conference tournaments.
So yeah.
We've seen in the past, right, where teams are 12-16 and they get into the NCAA tournament because they got hot.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate thing. I would correct that. The first thing I would do if I were commissioner for a day is say that your medium to small conferences where it's likely going to be one bid, like the American Conference where UAB is, the Southern Conference where Samford is, that you take the regular season champion, because that's a better gauge, obviously, of who's the best team in that league. It's the best gauge regardless of league. But we all know that in the SEC, as we talked about, Tennessee, Kentucky, Alabama losing didn't affect them getting in at all. They were not worried about getting in.
Yeah, you know? And Auburn.
And if Auburn had lost, none of those 4 would have been worried about it. They were all in.
Right.
So, but in the smaller to medium leagues, you know, you go 27-5 and you lose the first round, you're out.
Yeah, they're only taking 1.
Right. So it seems like we would change that to go, hey, the regular season does mean something for you guys. You can still have a conference tournament, but let's be honest. How big a moneymaker is the Southern Conference tournament in Asheville? Are they packed out when it's UTC against Furman in Asheville, North Carolina?
I missed that on television this spring.
Yeah. I mean, so that's where I think we're missing it a little bit.
Yeah. And I could pick on NC State as well, who is in the Sweet 16, didn't have a great regular season. They were competitive.
The coach was going to be fired, Doug.
Yeah.
My insiders tell me he was going to be fired. And now he's got a raise and an extension.
Through 2035, right?
How did that happen? He had 5 days He played in North Carolina, and I'm not making excuses for North Carolina, but they had nothing to play for the championship game except the ACC championship.
Right.
Really had nothing to play for. So, I mean, whereas North Carolina State's playing for their life. That's a big difference.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you could make the argument, as I was going to mention, like, should Pitt be from the ACC instead of NC State? You know, if you're going on the regular season.
Possibly.
Statistics. Possibly. Yeah, but yeah. Then you leave out a Sweet 16 like NC State. So, yeah. I don't know. Good question.
Is it cool to watch the ACC tournament and see them go 5 days? And then, yeah, that's cool. Like, I get the excitement of that. But doing it at the expense where that's the automatic over the regular season is really missing. I worry about cheapening the regular season. You don't want to do that. There's still meaning there, you know?
And we talked earlier about when I was a kid growing up in the ACC tournament with seven teams and one team got a bye, and it was so important. You had to win the ACC tournament.
Yeah.
That was like the biggest sporting event along with the Masters, hard to get a ticket to. So I guess it's an interesting question. Is that better entertainment or should we go by the regular season? That's a great question. Yeah.
To me, I always like the regular season, you know. I mean, there's nothing I hate worse than watching Auburn versus North Texas State and Alabama versus Tennessee Chattanooga in football. I mean, I would rather sit and watch grass grow in my front yard because it means nothing.
Yeah.
Now, when it's Auburn, Arkansas, or Alabama and Ole Miss, okay, now all of a sudden you've got my attention a little bit because it does mean something.
Right.
I'm just big on that myself, but not everybody is.
Me too. Hey, let's talk about the Tigers for just a minute. Last weekend, first round game against Yale, Chad Baker-Mazzara throws the elbow, gets ejected from the game. A lot of people have been talking about, was it a flagrant one or a flagrant two? I kind of come down on the, if that's not a flagrant two, what is a flagrant two side? What did you think of that? Was that the reason the Tigers got beat?
Of course, it's easy to say after the fact, but they were in the game the whole way. So they easily could have won, as you know. So I'm not ready to say. Now, he's important. He's a starter. He's a great defender. He's a good scorer. You know, he's obviously an important part of the team. But it's not like they got beat by 15 and got deflated when that happened and just got, you know what I mean, run out of the gym. That didn't happen. So I'm not going to say that. And but, we don't know if he plays if they win. We don't know that. Would it have helped him? Yeah, if he plays his normal game. But these are unknowns. Flagrant two, by the book of the law, it was. Was it really? I kind of lean that it was, you know, an NCAA tournament game. Maybe they shouldn't do a flagrant two. Maybe the right call was flagrant run, send a message, give him free throws, but keep him in the game. I don't know. But, you know, because a lot of people argue that he just reacted to the guy earlier. Well, that's fine, but you can't do that because you're always getting caught the second time, right? I mean, you can't play sports that way because that's going to happen.
You have to use your brain once in a while, right?
Right, right. So it's just a tough call. That's why I would think – you know, the right call after the fact, of course, we're looking at it after the fact, even though it was technically a flagrant two, is maybe give him a flagrant one because he was kind of reacting to something, even though he shouldn't have. That way he could have stayed the game, but you still give the ball and free throws. But you can't do that. It's not the way it happens. It happens in real time. So it is what it is.
More with Scott Griffin. March Madness is underway. The Sweet 16. We'll talk some more about the Bruce Pearl situation and Bruce Pearl's comments today when we come back on Tiger Talk Overtime. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now, 343-0106. Now, back to Doug Holton.
And welcome back to the show, everyone. Talking some college basketball, some March Madness with Scott Griffin tonight from Birmingham.
And Scott, I wanted to ask you about something we were talking about earlier in the show. Bruce Pearl, obviously frustrated today with the Auburn fans who are frustrated, at least a portion of them. Although they won the SEC championship, Auburn bows out in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Again, bowing out in the first weekend. They've only been past the first weekend one time during his tenure at Auburn. So is that a legitimate gripe from the Auburn fans? Do they have something to be disappointed about, or should they be celebrating the SEC championship from the Auburn Tigers this year?
That's another one where I kind of straddle the fence, because I see the arguments between Alabama and Auburn fans, right? They talk about that, and the Auburn fans will say, oh, but we've been to the Final Four. Look at you guys. You haven't been past the Sweet 16. And then Alabama goes, yeah, but we've been to three Sweet 16s in the past 4 years. I mean, so I see both sides of that, right? It's like at the end of the day, you could be upset. I see that you could be upset with Bruce Pearl's performance in the NCAAs, yes. But he's won, two or three SEC tournaments now, right?
A handful of tournaments and regular seasons.
And a couple of, yeah. So, and this is a competitive league. You're not going to dominate, probably.
Yeah.
You know, so that's pretty good. And I say that facetiously, obviously, it's really good. But are they good enough to have won more than first round games a few times? Well, yes, I think that's true as well. But again, it just shows you the smallness of margin of error. You have a guy throw an elbow, he's out. I don't think that's why they lost the game, but like I said, it didn't help. And then it comes down to you can't get the ball in the basket the last 15 seconds. You had some dead on looks. You had a dead look three. You had guys trying to throw it up there at the end. So if they make one of those, Bruce Pearl's a great coach. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
So, and who knows what would have happened with Auburn, San Diego State. Maybe they beat them. We don't know that. Maybe they're sitting there in the Sweet 16. So
no matter which way you go, you're still going to be playing UConn in Boston, whether it's Auburn or San Diego State.
Right. Which is incredibly difficult. You know, I mean, everybody expects UConn to be there and probably win it, but certainly to be in the Final Four. So I guess I agree with the fans that they should expect more, but they also went to a Final Four with this guy. So,
yeah, which is something Auburn's never
done. If you're going to blame it on him, then you've also got to give him credit that he got to the Final Four.
Right. I mean,
and they're a controversial play away from that, getting to the championship game.
Yeah, and maybe winning it all. So
what are we talking about?
Yeah. And we talked also about the recruiting differences, not only Bruce Pearl, but Nate Oates going for that more experienced player. And now a little bit later on tonight, Alabama has the top seed North Carolina in Los Angeles. And people are talking about Nate Oates after, some questions last year and this year, maybe.
Yeah.
And now they're saying maybe he's the best coach in Alabama history if he gets to the eight.
He could be. I'll tell you this about he and Bruce. If they see something wrong with their program as far as the way they're going, they don't mind taking a chance to go another way. Bruce did it like you were talking about, getting some JUCOs in, some more experienced guys. Bruce is kind of, to me, seems like he's getting the good player that he thinks he can develop even more, maybe keep there a couple of years and get him coached up that's got talent.
Right.
I think Nate's done some of that, but Nate has gone another way because last year he had an incredibly talented team, as you know, but Noah Clowney was a freshman. Brandon Miller was a freshman, right? Bediako was a sophomore. So he had a lot of young guys, and then San Diego State were there with four or five seniors and just bullied them around.
Yeah.
Knocked him out. So I think Nate saw that and went, okay, well, now when I get transfers, I'm going to get some juniors and seniors, guys that have played a lot of college basketball. And it's worked out well for him this year, So, and Bruce did the same thing. He got more experienced guys. And this is kind of a hot topic because you saw Jay Wright talking about Calipari. He says the Oakland thing, while it was an upset, they showed that picture of the guard there for Oakland that hit 10 threes.
Right.
And a guy guarding him. They said that's a 24-year-old Division I player who's played 5 years of college basketball against a 19-year-old.
Yeah.
Well, that if you have less talent, that's a pretty good thing to battle it with, right? And I think that's where Bruce and Nate saw that. And I think they're correct for thinking that way.
Yeah.
I really do.
Give me your take, Scott. Speaking of older guys, Cormac Ryan.
You didn't give me your thought on that. Do you agree with that? Do you like the – I think the older player I think Bruce and Nate obviously are both good recruiters. They at times can be too good of recruiters. You know, let's talk about 2 or 3 years ago. Who's the second pick in the draft? Jabari Smith, right?
Yeah.
So while he was great at Auburn, he was there a year.
Yeah.
Brandon Miller was phenomenal for Alabama.
And same thing with Walker Kessler.
Yeah. So he's there a year and he's gone. So right. What good did he do? Okay, he did good for that year. But look at Baycott at North Carolina. He's been there. It's like 15 years now.
Yeah. It's an interesting trade-off between a talented young guy and a maybe not so talented, but talented older guy with experience.
Right. Yeah. And I saw this firsthand. As you know, I've got a close relationship with John Brady, the former LSU coach. He almost recruited too well for LSU, who ended up going to a Final Four too, but he got Big Baby Davis and all the guys that he got, and they were so good, they left after a year or two. So
yeah.
He's
yeah.
constantly having to feel that, you know, that emptiness.
Right.
It's a different thing. I think you can recruit too good sometimes as opposed to getting a little lesser guy and developing him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, speaking of older guys, Cormac Ryan is about, 25, 26 for Carolina, and they're getting ready to play Alabama. Alabama has maybe some injury problems. We don't really know quite yet, but
Well, Reitzel did not practice yesterday, and he's pretty key for them. I would say he's equivalent to Auburn guy we're talking about. So, you know, I don't think – you can blame a loss on him if he doesn't play, but he's a starter. So, I mean, it's pretty good, right?
Yeah. And watching Alabama play Grand Canyon, I mean, Sears was absolutely, as we talked, amazing.
Yeah.
Shooting the ball, getting to the basket. But I thought he was going to have a heart attack there in the second half, but laying on the floor. He was so gassed. You know, can they do that again? Do they run up and down the floor with Carolina?
Well, you got a rebound to run up and down the floor. So with Carolina's guys and Baycott, now look, Estrada and Sears had 22 of Alabama's 44 rebounds, and they're capable of doing that. That wasn't just a one-game thing. They can rebound the ball. They're going to have to do that against Carolina, in my opinion. You've got to have team rebounding because those first two games were close for Alabama because they gave up a lot of offensive rebounds. So before you run, and I think they do need to run Carolina. I think they need to run them. But Nate Oates can't be so, what would the word be? Not scared, but hesitant to use his bench. He uses his bench a lot in the regular season.
Yeah,
I think he was hesitant in these two games. And that's why you saw those guys exhausted because they're used to getting a break, you know? So I think he's got to be able to trust him enough for a few minutes of rest time and that they'll hang in there with those guys. But I do think Alabama needs to run. But as you know, knowing basketball, you got to rebound before you run. You can't run without the ball. So,
yeah. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, Carolina's kind of known for running, but do they want to run with Alabama? Will they try to play a half court game? So,
I think they run at the times they can because RJ Davis and those guys are really good.
Yeah.
But when it's a half court deal, I kind of like Baycott against Alabama's interior defense. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah. But can you trade, can you trade twos for threes if Alabama's red hot?
That's the key. I think rebounding for Alabama. And then if they're hot from the three, hot from the three,
hard to beat.
It doesn't matter if they're out rebounded.
Right.
Right.
There are no rebounds.
Right. But if they're not, now all of a sudden it could be 15 point swing the other way. So I wouldn't be surprised if Alabama won this game, if Alabama lost by 15. None of that in between surprises me.
Yeah.
You just don't know how the game's going to go.
Gotcha. Well, it'll be fun to watch this weekend, the SEC, and we'll see how the ACC fares.
We didn't even talk about Tennessee.
We didn't talk about Tennessee, did we? But
I like Tennessee.
You think I get the feeling that they're kind of not playing as well as they once were during the regular season, but they've got Creighton tomorrow, which would be an interesting ball game too.
That's a great game. Creighton's been the Elite Eight 2 years in a row, and nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
But they're a really good program.
And Gonzaga.
Yeah, and they're sixth in attendance. Did you know that? In the entire country.
Creighton. I did not.
And yet we look at them like, well, they're kind of a mid-major. No, that's a major basketball power.
Yeah. You
know, merging.
And Gonzaga has, we talk about Sweet 16s, they have nine in a row, I think.
Yeah. I remember when they were like, oh, that's kind of an outlier name.
Little mid-major.
They're there somewhere. Every year. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like Kansas now. So I like Tennessee. I think it's a Final Four team. I'm good friends with one of the assistants there. He thinks they're a Final Four team, and he's the kind that's not going to tell me that if he doesn't really think it. So to your point, they haven't played well offensively, but they're so good defensively and rebounding the ball. And as you know, that's so key in March Madness. That's how they won. That's how they won their last game. They were horrible offensively. I think Connect was 5 of 18, and they win the game. You know, so I think they're really a legit Final Four contender.
It'll be fun to watch Alabama and North Carolina coming up in a few minutes. And, of course, Tennessee and Creighton, as we mentioned, happening on Friday at 9:09. It is scheduled to be on TBS and True TV. So there really isn't a Cinderella left unless you consider NC State out of the ACC. Cinderella. Scott Griffin with us from Birmingham tonight. Appreciate his time. When we come back, we'll visit with Nick Kleinert, the head golf coach at Auburn. The Tigers have been ranked 1 or 2 all season. Jackson Koivin continues to have a phenomenal freshman season. We'll talk golf and Masters when we come back on Tiger Talk Overtime.
Welcome back to Tiger Talk Overtime, presented by Will2, number one in quality and safe work for industry. To be a part of the show, call the Morgan Bradley Alpha Insurance Tiger Line now, 343-0106. Now, back to Doug Holton.
Okay, thanks very much. Welcome back into the show, everyone. Tiger Talk Overtime on a Thursday night. Glad you're with us, talking some Auburn Athletics. We've covered basketball and a little bit of football tonight. Again, we'll jump into more college football and Auburn football next week as it is A-Day week on the Plains. But right now, we want to talk a little bit of Auburn golf with golf season coming into full bloom and the Masters not far away around the corner in Augusta, Georgia. And the Auburn golf team, led by Coach Nick Kleinert, has been ranked number one or number two, kind of going back and forth with North Carolina in that spot all season. A very talented team, a very successful team. They have 6 wins in the fall and in the spring so far. And just recently, this week in Wilmington, North Carolina, Coach Nick Kleinert, who is on the line with us now, picked up his 50th win for the Auburn Tigers since he's been at Auburn since 2009. And Coach, want to welcome you to the show and say congratulations. I know you've had a lot of help along the way with some great players, but nonetheless, that is a fantastic accomplishment.
Well, first of all, War Eagle, Doug, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. No, listen, it's just very blessed. You know, blessed to be at a great university with great support and great players. And, you know, great players make coaches look pretty good, don't they? But just – I mean, I would have never thought in my wildest dreams that you know, when I took the job, you know, July of 2009, that I'd be able to win 50 times. But it all goes back to the players, and it goes back to the support of the administration and giving us the resources and facilities to be able to compete.
Yeah, I thought of Coach Pearl when I saw that and his comment that we play on the intro every week. That he thought when he came to Auburn, he wasn't sure that he could win championships, but he knew he could be somewhat successful. Do you remember what you thought coming to Auburn, what you had in mind to accomplish?
You know, I just knew that It was a special place, a special university, and I wanted to go out and compete against the best, and I wanted to coach in the best league in the country. And, you know, I wanted to personally, I wanted to challenge myself to see, hey, you know, how good could we be? How good could I do against all these great coaches and great programs that are out there across the country? And, but I knew that, I knew if we worked hard, I knew if we did the right things, I knew if we pushed to better our facilities, and I knew if we recruited hard and recruited the right way, I knew that Auburn would sell itself, and ultimately we would get the right fits, and the right people would come, you know, to the program and you know, get the program where it needed to be, and just been very, like I said, very blessed to have a lot of young men that trusted me and trusted Auburn, and it all worked out so far.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of those young men, Jackson Coivin, again, the freshman of the week. This week he continues to impress. He's really playing at a high level and continues to play at a high level.
I think that SEC Freshman of the Week award is probably going to be called the Jackson Coivin Award pretty soon. He seems like he wins it every time he tees off. But, you know, Doug, he's had two tournaments he's finished outside the top four. And one of them was a sixth and one of them was a 19th. Mm-hmm. That is highly, highly impressive. But he's a kid that he's very mature beyond his years, not only as a golfer, but as a person. He knows what he wants. He works hard. I wouldn't say he works smart all the time, but he does work hard. And I think he's learning how to practice, and he's learning how to what his weaknesses and strengths are and how to develop his game. And he's got a great coach in Fred Garcia that's coached him since he was a little kid. And, you know, he's works on the right things, and he's got a bright future ahead of him. He's going to make a lot of money playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's going to do one day.
I hate to see him when he learns how to practice, right?
It's just more being about how to be efficient, you know, yeah, and how to use your time well, and don't just throw a bunch of time at your game, but and break it into segments, right? You know, I need to spend this much time on my wedge game and this much time on my, you know, the bunker play and putting or whatever it may be, versus, you know, sometimes I think young players throw a bunch of time at their game, and then they feel like they panic a little bit when they haven't maybe spent enough time in certain areas that they know they probably should. So mm-hmm. It's more about structuring and being organized.
With him having a coach since he's been, like you said, a little kid or growing mm-hmm. up, how do you handle that as a college coach? What kind of role do you play? What do you try to chip mm-hmm. in there?
I look at it, first of all, I love it when they have coaches that they've been with for a long time or guys that they're in their corner. And I've got some very good friends of mine, and Mark Blackburn and Scott Hamilton and those guys that work with quite a few of the guys on the team. So that communication is great. And, you know, Jackson's case, you know, Fred has been with him a long time. And the way I look at swing coaches and you know, coaches in general that these players have is they teach them and then we manage it. It's a total team effort. You know, we're all trying to help them, you know, chase their dreams and get to where they want to go. And I always tell the guys that college golf's not the end game. You know, for those of you that want to play the tour and make the Walker Cup team or whatever it may be that you desire in this game, you know, college's golf is one of the avenues that's going to help you get to where you want to go, but it's not the end game. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the end game is playing in majors and winning major championships. But they teach them, we manage it, and it's a team effort. We have great communication, and we're all on the same page. That's the key. It's all about communication, just like anything else in life.
Mm-hmm. I looked at the rankings. I'm not sure how current they are a few minutes ago, but I think mm-hmm.
they came out today.
Yeah, fifth or sixth in the individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. He's right there. You know, those rankings are sometimes hard to figure out. I think he has a hard time figuring out. I have a hard time figuring out. Other coaches have a hard time figuring it out because it's a new ranking system. It's a Mark Brody system, which is way smarter than I am. And but it's a Strokes gain system, which is, you know, on the surface looks like it'd be more of a PGA Tour generated type ranking thing. But, you know, I'm not really sure how it works, but I do know this, you know, all you can do is control what you can control. And if you keep getting better and you keep playing good golf, then good things will happen.
And I know he's a freshman, but is he the best you've ever had on the college level?
I would say he reminds me a lot of Blaine Barber. You know, Blaine was a second team All-American his freshman year when he played for me at UCF. And, you know, he came to Auburn when I took the job and was a first team All-American at Auburn. But, you know, Blaine was a very similar player. Hits it really straight, great putter, you know, great demeanor, hard worker, mature, knew how to play. And so I think that they remind me a lot of each other. But I would say, yeah, Jackson's right up there with one of the they're the best freshmen that ever walked foot at Auburn University.
Mm-hmm. You had a chance to play a couple teams like we talked last time at Auburn and then last weekend. Heading into Mississippi and then the SEC championships, what did you find out about your team? I know you had some kind of blustery weather up there in North Carolina, but did you find out anything about them?
I found out it was who could play in really, really cold weather and really a lot of wind. I've never been so cold in my life, Doug, on a golf course. I don't remember being any colder than that.
Yeah.
On the 36th hole day, it was absolutely freezing and blowing about 30. And I had four jackets on. I had these big, I look like a football coach in the NFL, you know, on the sideline with these big jackets, and it was freezing. But I learned that I think our 1-2-3 punch is pretty strong. And I think I'll put it up against anybody's in the country. And, you know, in Jackson and Carson Bach and Brendan Valdez, and those three guys have been playing some great, great golf for us. And I think we've kind of ham and egged it, you know, in the 4, 5, 6, 7 spots. And, you know, same thing I'll tell, you know, I told the team, like, we need some guys that step up. You know, we need Reed Lauder to step up. We need Alex Vogelsong to step up. We need J.M. Butler to step up and play the way he's, you know, played in the past and what he's capable of. And we got some young guys in Caden Pope and Josiah Gilbert. And, you know, you got Ryan Eshelman right there. He's played some really good golf for us. And it's just about being consistent. You know, college golf rewards a little more consistency maybe than pro golf does. You know, but I think we got a little bit more clarity on kind of where we're at. But there's still a lot of golf to be played. It's still March the 27th. And, you know, and we don't play NCAA championship until the end of May. Mm-hmm. You know, so we still got, you know, 2 months to kind of figure it out. But we need some guys to kind of take that spot and basically say that I'm not going to let the coaches, I'm not going to leave it in the coaches' hands because I'm going to earn it.
Coach Nick Kleinert, coach of the Auburn golf team. Want to thank him for being with us tonight. Wish them well in the future. Also, thanks to Scott Griffin for talking college basketball. More football next week as it's A-Day. That's all the time we have for tonight, everybody. Until next week, I'm Doug Holton saying War Eagle.